Blog Talk Radio.
There's the introductions coming up.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I and on the air.
Well, hi everyone. This is Fran Lewis. I'm your host, and this is MJ Network. And I think the rain is finally stopping, or it's attempting to stop. But we are going to really have a hot show because author Patricia Hale is here, and Scar Tissue is her novel, and this one you got to read. So I'm going to do something different. I'm going to read the introduction from my book review. Beneath the perfect veneer of some lies an evil, so well defined and so deeply hidden that no one sees what lies within. Parents are supposed to be supportive and nurturing and protective. Children should be encouraged to succeed, but not to the point of distraction that it consumes their every waking hour and drives them over the edge. Ashley Lambert was brilliant and had everything to live for, so why did she jump 18 stories to her death? I'm not going to tell you that. And I'm not going to let the author's not going to tell you that. You're going to have to read the book to find out. And how are you? And how's the weather over where you are? Because it's horrible here.
Hi, Fran. It's getting worse. I think the rain's heading this way. I'm in Maine, and it's definitely cloudy and looks like it's ready to rain or maybe something even worse.
Yeah, I think we're getting it a little bit more later. So, Scottish,
yeah.
This is an interesting book. Tell us about, because I've never read about them, Britt and Griff. I take it this is not their first novel together. How did they come together and how did they work as a team? Because I really like them.
Britt was originally a family law attorney, and they met during a court case. Griff is a private eye, and Britt was doing a case where a woman was actually killed. The woman she was representing ended up being killed, and she left the law practice lost her confidence and stepped out of the law arena. And then Griff sort of picked her up, and he talked her into becoming a private eye with him, doing investigative work, and joining his firm. So that is how they got together.
Well, that was interesting, yeah. And they seem to have two very strong personalities, yet different. So tell us about Allie and her.
I was just going to say, yeah, Britt often approaches her cases sort of from her law background, and Griff comes into it from more of a police background, I think. So they do often have opposing views, which kind of keeps it interesting.
Well, if they would agree on everything, that would keep it boring. You don't want people to agree. And if there's no conflict,
right.
What's the point of having a murder novel? Yeah. So we've got
right.
Allie. What is her relationship with Britt? I like that character, by the way.
Yeah, Allie is Griff's teenage daughter. He was married. He has a previous marriage. And so she is 14 now. And she and Britt get along great because of the age difference. Griff and his ex-wife are both mid-40s, and Britt is early 30s. So Allie feels more comfortable relating to Britt. And so Britt often acts kind of as a friend and a go-between for Allie with her parents.
That is really cool. And she's a smart kid to realize that.
She's a good kid, yeah. She tries.
Well, if teenagers were perfect, then they would be boring. And then I know from my nephews and nieces, if they are good kids. But if you get too boring, forget it. That wouldn't be them either.
Right.
So,
right.
So there's this house that gave me the spooks when they went in there. So why did they decide to buy this house? And what about it seems odd from the start, but yet they decide to buy it anyway? And I don't know how I would feel about that.
Yeah, they Britt and Griff have both have their own apartments in Portland, Maine, although they spend most of their time together at one place or another. So in the first two books in the series, they do have separate living places. In the beginning of Scar Tissue, they've decided to buy a house together. And so they do purchase a house. It's in Yarmouth, Maine. And they want to just kind of get out of the city so that they get a break and have a little quieter place to return home to after a day's work. But there's a lot of red flags about the house right from the start. One of them being the owners next door, the owners of this house are really in a rush to sell it. They're offering a beautiful home for way under selling price. So that's kind of the first red flag. And then when they go with their realtor to look at the house, they hear a strange whining coming from the woods. The realtor kind of blows it off and says they have cats next door, but Britt's not convinced. And on the next visit to the house, they meet the neighbors, Rhea and Mike McKenzie, and they have some pretty odd behavior. So even though they've got some red flags up and Britt's not sure, they do decide to go ahead and buy the house, mostly because the price is so good and the house is really what they want.
Well, I know, and that alone sets the stage for what's going to happen. It's scary, let me tell you. And wait till they really get to know Mike and Rhea, let me tell you.
Right.
Ashley Lambert, you started the story with that specific scene. Why did you start it with that, and tell us about her, and why, you know, the suicide didn't fit her image, but she seemed to be very, very pressured into a lot of
right.
things, and she seemed to have to act, and everything that her father or mother, father wanted her to do was like perfection, and I know how that feels at times too, but it can be overwhelming and it could destroy you. So how come you started it with that, and how did you create that in her?
I started with Ashley. You're right, was a perfect child, straight A student. She's she's a college student at Fensworth College, and she's just been accepted into the master's program in bioethics at Johns Hopkins. So she's really in a great position. She's a star track and field athlete, and but she's just inside falling apart. She makes it her mission after her brother dies to kind of make the family become whole again, hold her parents together and keep her father's interest, which he's beginning to, because he was so connected to his son after his death, he sort of is losing interest in the family, turning into himself. And but so Ashley just outdoes herself to try to keep her father's interest in herself and in the family. And I started the story with her suicide because I wanted I didn't want the reader to feel sad about Ashley's death. I wanted them to not really know her yet when she commits suicide, so that as they get to know her, their emotion can grow as the story goes on. So the more they get to know Ashley and understand why she was doing what she was doing, they become more and more attached to her and almost see it from an outsider's perspective as they watch her as the story moves forward.
Yeah, I know. And as you get to know her and you get to know some of the people that she knows, it's sad. So when did her parents...
Yeah,
it's sad. I mean, I wonder how many parents would have done what her parents did. Why did they hire Britt and Griff, and for what reason? And what did they hope to find out? Because sometimes when you want to find out something, you don't want to know the answer.
Right. Well, her father, Greg, definitely did not, you know, held Ashley to a very high standard. He wanted only perfection. And so when she committed suicide, he felt that, you know, no child of his would ever do that. That showed some kind of a flaw in her thinking. So he immediately felt that it was not her decision. He thinks initially that someone was involved, someone pushed her, that she would never have done that. And so he hires Britt to find out why she jumped or what actually happened with the suicide.
Well, you know, sometimes perfection is a disease, too. I know that. And I know that
right.
sometimes parents expect you to do everything to the highest standards, and then when you don't, you feel like you let them down, and that's pretty much how I felt about poor Ashley. No matter what she did, it was never really good enough. Well, that's what worries. That's what's scary, and parents really need to not do that.
Right. She never felt that she was good enough for her father. You're right.
Well, we have Gwen and Gary, and their marriage seems one of convenience. And why does Gary seem to know Ashley only when she exhibited a talent as a runner? That's the father. And he changed, like you said, when his son died. So why did he leave?
Right. Greg and Gwen married young. And really, Gwen married him for prestige. Her own history is that her parents were divorced, and they sort of fell out of, she and her mother kind of fell out of the country club scene that they had as she was growing up when they got her parents divorced. So when she married Greg, she really wanted that prestige again, and that's what he could give her. So even though the marriage was not really a loving marriage, she wanted to hold it together at any cost, just to basically for show, to project this image of the perfect, stable family. But Greg was really narcissistic and really consumed with himself, and the only person he really had shown any interest in was Clayton, their son, but who died young. He was 12 years old. And so after that, Greg was really ready to leave until he noticed Ashley was beginning to win. She was in the track. She was getting awards. She was really having some major success, both as an athlete and a student. And that began to get his attention, because for Greg, Ashley's success was his own success. If she was doing well, then he felt that reflected back on him as a parent and showed that he was a successful person.
Well, he never really praised her, if I remember correctly. And I'm just wondering, if Clayton hadn't died, would he have done the same thing to Ashley? Probably not.
No, I think if Clayton hadn't died, he hardly would have noticed Ashley. You know, he was very involved with his son, and that was really the only person he was connected to in the family.
That's scary. So now we meet the couple next door. Britt gets to know Rhea. And what does she learn about her first child, and why didn't they find him? And as you look straight, they're kind of odd, too, Rhea and Mike. I liked her. I didn't like him at all.
Right. yeah, so Britt, as they move in, Britt befriends Rhea, the next-door neighbor, and as she gets to know her better, she learns that their first child had disappeared when he was a year old, right out of their house. Rhea was in the kitchen making lunch, and the child was playing in the other room, and when she came back in, he was gone. Mike McKenzie, her husband, is a cop for the Portland police, and there was a huge investigation and manhunt that went on for months. The FBI was called in, but the child was never found. And Mike really always blamed Rhea for Jonathan's disappearance. And they finally just believed that someone had come in the home and taken him, but they never found him.
And we won't say any more about that. So,
right, that's as far as we can go.
Seriously, one of the issues, I mean, I'm an educator, so I notice abuse constantly. And unfortunately, I did report spousal abuse and child abuse a lot, and I did. And unfortunately, I was right every time. I'd rather be wrong, but I was right. So, why did you include the issue of spousal abuse and parent pressuring within this novel? Because that definitely comes out loud and clear.
Right, and you know, all three books in the series do involve abuse toward women, and. I actually don't know. I always tend to veer toward these topics, and there was some personal experience in family with family members regarding these topics, but and I think I'm just drawn to the topic because I want to understand it. I think it's I find it interesting and just how someone can present as one person and yet be so completely different behind closed doors, so to say. and just how an abuser plays so much on your trust, that when you do learn the truth about them, you almost feel like it's your fault for trusting, for believing who they presented as. Or so it becomes so mixed up, you know, your thinking, it gets, they're so good at manipulating your thinking, that I just find them to make really an interesting, interesting but very disturbing character, an abusive person. So I think I'm just drawn towards that because I want to understand how they, why they think the way they do.
And I think
for the parenting pressure,
parenting pressure,
I think, like you said, so many kids feel parental pressure, whether it's athletics or academics. And I think what's interesting is how a child reacts to that. You know, there can be so many ways to react. In Ashley's case, she just went above and beyond anything she really could sustain. And while other kids, I think, just shut down. So I think the interesting thing in parental pressure is just seeing, looking at the reaction of the child and then kind of developing that.
No, I agree, because as an educator, there are a lot of parents that expected perfection from their kids. And sometimes they were able to attain it, and sometimes they just gave up, and they just let their grades slide. I know my mom insisted that if I didn't get 100 on a test, to be very honest, if I got 99, I had to write the whole test over to make it perfect.
Oh, my God.
It was hard. And after a while, I said to her, you know what, I got 98. Do you mind if I just write the one I got wrong? And she finally realized, I said, I'm not going to do worse, but it seemed ridiculous to write it over. I said, learn from your mistakes, but there comes a point where it gets to you, yeah. So tell us why Britt and Griff felt that there might be another reason as to what happened, and that maybe drugs were involved, and that maybe Ashley was into something, and how did the ME help to sort that out? Because you don't know, these drug enhancers and kids want to do their best, and then they take steroids and stuff. So how did that come into play? Because that's very real, very realistic.
Yeah, I think they first started to wonder. Gwen's sister Carol and Griff about Ashley, and she made the comment that Ashley was really almost too good at everything she did. And that kind of stuck in Griff's head, that she had said that she was really too good, and he started thinking about that more and more. And he did ask her about drugs, but because Ashley came across as such a perfect child, nobody ever suspected that anything like that would be going on until that Gina Wellington is the ME, the medical examiner, and she did the autopsy. And she, there's not a lot to work with from a 18-story fall, but they did do some routine blood work that showed amphetamines. It showed dextroamphetamine, which is a component in Adderall. And at first that didn't raise too much of a red flag because it's a pretty common college campus drug. You know, it increases energy and decreases appetite and sleeping. So it's fairly common, I believe, on college campuses. But the problem becomes that it's very highly addictive. So even though a kid might think, I'm just going to take it to get a couple of exams done, you know, they suddenly find themselves addicted. So that was the first thing they found. And then the second thing the ME found was it's called EPO, erythropoietin, which is something that's almost impossible to prove and more likely, most often found more in professional athletes. But the way that works is it's a protein hormone produced in the kidneys, and it goes into your bloodstream and increases your red blood cell count. And so the more red blood cells you have, the higher oxygen level you have. And that gives you an increased energy and endurance. So athletes will do this. They inject themselves with red blood, which boosts their red blood cells, and then they have a longer endurance. And if you use your own blood, then it's almost impossible to detect that. So that's
scary.
Yeah, it is scary. You know, that is.
It is scary. You labeled that as blood doping. Is that what that's called?
Yes. And I don't, you know, at the college level, I don't think that goes on if at all. I think it's more professional athletes. I think at the college level, you know, you may see some of the amphetamine, but I don't know that you'd necessarily see much of the EPO.
A lot of times, because I know I have two nephews in college and one that just graduated and one that's in nursing school now, and they feel the pressure of all the work because they have so much to do in this unlimited time. And unfortunately, I hear people saying, well, I'm going to take caffeine pills or I'm going to take this upwards to stay awake. And they don't realize what's the downside is what happens when you don't take them. And you just have to sort of like bide your time and use a planner and just do things one step at a time without getting, you know, the use of Xanax or Adderall or any of that. That's scary. Because you hear that a lot.
It is scary because it's just so addictive. And I think kids don't think that, you know, they think I'll just use it a couple of times and then but it's so addictive that it gets hold of them pretty quickly.
Well, Ashley never really seemed to, but we have, who is Mitzi? I don't like this girl. And why did she dislike Ashley as her roommate? Yeah. You know, roommates are hard, too, because you're going to college, and my nephew had his own room. He was lucky. He didn't have to deal with people. He was lucky. But, so, you know, you have to get just the right person, and if it's the wrong person, you know, your college experience could be a nightmare if you have a wrong person. So why does Mitzi, you know, she seems like a phony baloney. And how did you create her as her roommate? I didn't like her at all.
Mitzi was, so Mitzi's her Ashley's roommate. They kind of got thrown together because they were both on the in track and field. So that's sort of how they ended up together. Whoever puts roommates together decided they might be a match since they both had that interest. So they were very different, though. Ashley was from a very wealthy family, and Mitzi was there on academic scholarship. Her family struggled. And Mitzi was very jealous of Ashley. She was jealous of her wealth, and she was jealous of her success on the track. Mitzi came in a close second in all the races. She was right on Ashley's heels, but could just never quite finish ahead of her. But then when Griff and Britt spoke with Mitzi about Ashley, she really claimed she had no knowledge of her, that even though they shared a room, she never really got to know her at all, which wasn't necessarily all of the truth. And that also throws up a flag in Griff's head that he thinks, you know, two girls living together, you've got to know each other a little bit. Mitzi kept his interest.
Well, they usually girls yak away. Oh, what do you do? You have a boyfriend? What do you like? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, usually. Sometimes, but not always. So we have the coaches. What did they say about Ashley? And you would think someone that, you know, sees somebody all the time and watches her run and realizes she's so fast would wonder, how come she's running so fast and is she taking drugs? Why didn't they realize it?
Right. I think people see what they want to see, and Coach Massett had a star that nobody could beat in Ashley. He even does finally agree or says to Griff that she was off at times. He thought she wasn't quite right. She didn't act quite right, sort of acted agitated, but he said he just kind of ignored it. He had a winning team. He didn't want to rock the boat. He said, and again, with the drug testing, you know, I think it's different at the college level because these are still our children. You know, when a college kid's doing great and having great success, I think coaches and parents, you want to celebrate that success because we still see college athletes as our kids. When they get into a professional level, I think all that changes. So I think people saw what they wanted to see. They wanted to celebrate her success, not question it. So the coach didn't do a lot to look into it, even though at times he didn't think she was quite right. I think Gwen knew something was going on, but she was, you know, pretty happy by the fact that Greg was back staying home, interested in Ashley. He was getting back involved in the family again. And even though Gwen, I think, questioned what was happening with Ashley, she didn't want to pursue it either because she wanted to be sure her husband wasn't leaving or wandering.
Yeah, he was.
So everybody kind of, you know, I think people knew something was up, but didn't want to question it, all for their own selfish reasons.
Yeah, they have blinders on purpose, and sometimes they don't want to lift a mist in the mask. I know. And,
right.
This is a good, really, seriously, I don't know if I put this in the book, but in the review, but I should have, or I did. This is great for parents. Yeah, I did. Parents and educators and coaches need to read this to understand what can happen if they don't open their eyes and realize that,
yeah.
You know, the play, even playing on a simple baseball team can be pressure. Just being
mm-hmm.
number one star, yeah. So when they tested the girls and she came back clean, how did she fool them? And she did fool them.
Well, she did. They don't test a lot at the college level. It's my son was a college athlete, an All-American, so I did talk to him quite a bit about drug testing, and he said it's pretty rare that they test at the college level. But as I put it in the book, the way that Ashley could do it is it depends on the reaction time of the drugs. And she was shooting it into her bloodstream so that she was able to, if she was tested, she was able to do the test, and then it was an immediate reaction. So she could do the injection right after the test and get on the track, and it could go unseen. What she was using would give her an immediate reaction. There was no downtime of waiting for it to kick in.
Well, that's so weird. But no one realized it. And no one realized it that she was off. Nobody even questioned when she was off. How come no one did? I mean, it was evident that they realized eventually, yeah. They didn't want to know.
I think partly they didn't want to know. And it really, you know, her being off for her was she was a little jittery, which, you know, we can all get a little jittery from whether it's nerves and caffeine. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I think people just, her coach specifically says he kind of chalked it up to that because she wasn't overly, there was nothing overly that you could put your finger on that really made her seem up. And she'd get out on the track and run and win. And, you know, so she was performing well. It was just in talking, he'd say she seemed a little bit, her words were coming too quick and she just seemed a little off, but not enough that he felt it was worth pursuing. But you're right when you say, you know,
yeah.
people need to pay more attention to that and not be so focused on winning.
You're right. I mean, after teaching for 1,000 years, I had these 4 boys that were quadruplets in my school, and they were all on sports, and they were all great kids. And when one of them walked in and was giving the teacher a hard time, I just said, something's not right because this is not who this child is, and I called him out.
Yeah.
And I called the parent, and I found
yeah.
out that the mother was in drug rehab, and it was affecting him. You sort of noticed it right away. And otherwise, I mean, I noticed it right away. No one else did.
Yeah.
And then I said to the teacher, we've got to fix this because this is an A-plus student. I'm not going to let him fall down. People need to realize that. You see a change of a child that's too quiet becomes loud all of a sudden, or someone that's loud and becomes
yeah.
too quiet, you got a problem. So
yeah.
when Britt gets too close to Rhea, what does she realize? And she doesn't report that this man is not very good to her. And how come? She sort of covers for him. Why? Because for some reason, women that are abused blame themselves for some reason.
Right. Yeah. Once Britt and Rhea begin to get closer, they're at a pool. excuse me, at the pool, and Britt does see bruises on Rhea's back, and she's.
Mm-hmm.
She begins to pay much more attention about Mike's behavior around Rhea. She notices he's a well-liked cop in Portland. Mike is works for the Portland Police Department. And so in talking with Rhea about, you know, initially Britt does say, we've got to report this, you know, you've got to, you know, I'll go with you and this and that. And she's, you know, he's been on the force for a long time. She said no one's going to take her side if she goes in and reports his abuse.
Mm-hmm.
She's concerned that it will only make things worse. You know, she said then he's going to come home furious and it's going to be even worse for me. So at that time, and she's pregnant with her second child, so she's extremely concerned about her pregnancy and being sure that nothing happens to that. And she's afraid if Mike gets mad and comes home angry, he's going to shove her around and could do damage to the child. So she does talk to Britt about the plan. She's got a plan. She's been putting money aside. She's waiting. She's in her coming close to delivery. She's right in the 9th month, and she said as soon as the baby's born, she has a plan to leave. And so Britt agrees that she will help her get out instead of reporting it. They decide together that it's more important for her to get out and disappear after the baby's born than to report Mike at this point. So that's the plan they put together.
Well,
but
sometimes
it does
create
a lot of conflict.
Yeah, it does.
Creates a lot of conflict for Britt because she feels she needs to tell Griff about it, but she knows mm-hmm. he'll report it. And so she's kind of hiding it from him as well, and that creates a conflict for her, internal conflict around Griff, feeling bad that she's not being upfront with him.
Basically, she doesn't have to report it. He does. And an educator has to report it or you can get in trouble for not. You have no choice
right.
but to report it. That I learned.
right. Yeah.
So tell us more about Rhea, and Rhea tries to befriend her. And what happens when she calls to take her to the hospital? Why didn't the nurse realize that she had bruises that were caused by somebody else? Usually a hospital would definitely say, well, I'm going to report this because I have to. But this particular case, they did not. How come?
Well, the nurse did say to Britt, she did ask mm-hmm. her about the bruises.
Yeah.
When Britt brings Rhea in, when she's going into labor, Britt drives her to the hospital and brings her in. The nurse does say, what's up with the bruises, asked Britt, because Rhea's in labor. And she just, Britt says, let's discuss that. We'll talk about it after. Let's get her through the labor. Let's get through the delivery. And the nurse said, well, you know, you can be sure we're going to address it. It doesn't ever get addressed because of what is going on outside of the hospital, which I don't want to say.
Right.
But she, so that's kind of why it's never addressed, is because it's kind of a moot point after the baby's born. But she does mention it and says she's going to address it after the baby's born. But then that it never goes that direction because of something else that happens.
Well, before I forget, Wednesday, USA award-winning author John Land will be here with the new Murder, She Wrote series, Manuscript for Murder. Jessica Fletcher never looked great. Veterans Day, I'm doing something very unusual. The author's name is I Am Waiting. I don't know his real name. That's what he uses. The book is called In My Mother's Honor. This man is in his 70s, and he never got his veterans benefits, and he talks about what he went through in Vietnam and what he's going through now. On the 14th, for those of you that are brave, not squeamish, go on YouTube and watch Island Zero by Tess Gerrinson. I just got off watching it. It's terribly scary. And we're going to talk about the movie that day, just me and Tess. I'm so excited. On the 20th, Vincent Zandri will be here with Flower Man. On the 26th, a network exposed a former DEA and SWAT detective, Bo Wagner. And to end November, what better way than with a 9/11 survivor? The book is called 9/11 by Arnie Van Wy. On the 4th, Matt Coyle will be here, and that's the day the book comes out, The Wrong Light. And on the 6th, Jeff Bond, The Winner Maker. So that's just some of what I'm up to. I'm really excited. And what happens that changes it all for Rhea and Britt? What is like the turning point for them?
Well, there's a major altercation between Mike and Rhea, and Rhea calls Britt in the midst of it, asking her to come over to the house. This is just before she goes into labor. And she and Mike are having a major altercation, the result of which sends her into labor. And Britt makes a decision during this fight, and that is the turning point for Rhea and for Britt, really. It's a decision she makes that puts everything on the line, her work, her relationship, even her freedom. But she goes forward believing it's the only option, and she handles it on her own because she's afraid if she talks to Griff, he'll talk her out of it. She knows if she does anything else that Rhea will be the one that pays the price, and the baby will. So she risks herself or her position to do what she thinks will be bring about justice for both Rhea and her baby.
In real life,
so
would somebody
do that? Pardon me?
In real life, would somebody do that?
I don't know either.
I thought about that as I'm reading. I go, I don't know if in reality somebody would risk her relationship with somebody that she cares about, plus Allie, plus everything else, and just say, okay, this, I would be surprised. And I'm surprised that she didn't report it. And
I think that had she reported it, the outcome would have been, Rhea would have been blamed for everything. And I think she would have, because unfortunately, I think that's what happens in cases like that. I think the person that has been abused is the one that pays in the end. And I think, you know, Britt knew that, and she knew with her background in family law, she'd seen these cases, and she knew what Rhea was saying was right, that she'd end up losing her baby, and I think that Britt just believed her and believed that there was no other way. I mean, maybe there was another way, but I think she wasn't willing to risk it, and she went ahead with what her decision was at her own risk, really.
Well, that's what's come back to Mitzi versus Ashley. And Mitzi was kind of happy that Ashley's dead, wasn't she? Because now she could be the star of the clan, right? She was thrilled, in a way. Nothing like your friend being dead.
I mean, she wasn't
sorry.
No, she wasn't really sorry. I think she felt like it was time that it gave her. She was able to then move forward in her own life. And, I don't think any tears were shed over Ashley's death when it came to Mitzi. She had her own ideas about how to handle Ashley and with what she was doing kind of behind the scenes, which does come out. And you know, she really had a hand in the whole outcome as well, which didn't pay off well for her, but she believed it would.
Well, sometimes when you believe something, it doesn't always happen.
That's right.
So Britt did some pretty, you know, sneaky things, and she gets close with Rhea, and she doesn't really tell Griff about a lot of things. How do you tell somebody the truth, and will they have a future if, you know, she tells them the truth, or she's just going to keep it like, I'm not going to say anything because I'm going to get panned for this one? And I don't know how he would feel about what she did. I don't know.
Right. She is afraid to tell him initially, but she knows she has to. I mean, and she, in her head, she's decided she will tell him, but she's not quite ready. She wants to give it a little more thought until he basically finds out from something he finds in her car, and he kind of puts together what might have happened, and then he confronts her, and she comes clean. She tells him the truth and all of what happened, but he's really more disappointed in himself and the way he has presented to her than in her. He's sorry that she couldn't come to him with the truth right from the start, that of what was going on with Rhea, what was happening to her at home. You know, he feels badly that Britt didn't feel safe enough with him to come and let him know exactly what was happening. And then in the end, why she didn't call him and let him help her, or at least discuss the whole thing with him before she went ahead with taking such a risk for herself.
Well, I think part of it might have been that Rhea confided in her, and maybe she felt that if she told Griff that she would break her trust. So she felt like loyalty to a friend, you know, between a rock and a hard place. So she sort of placed her in a difficult situation. I don't know, in real life, maybe she would have realized, I'm going to lose this guy, I'm going to lose everything, and yet this girl, you know, doesn't want me to tell, because what happens if she doesn't survive? So that was sort of make her feel that, yeah, that was going through my mind just now as
I'm writing. Right, a lot of loyalty comes into it, especially with the life Rhea was involved in, with the abuse and all that she had suffered already. I think Britt wanted to really, was trying to protect her as much as she could.
Sometimes you can't, no matter what you do. So,
right.
When you write the, are you writing another one for this series? I have to make sure you.
I haven't started another one. I have not started yet, but I will. I'm thinking about new cases for them.
Read some of the books I've been reading. You'll come up with some of them. So, are you going to introduce Allie more and give her more of a role, and what kind of a teen she's going to turn into? Because she's one of my, you know, you don't get too many teens in books that are really, that you want to read about. I get the recalcitrant ones that I just want to, you know, smack in the head and say, like, wake up, that's not how you're supposed to be. Seriously.
Yeah, I think this book has, by the end, I think it's made the relationship between Britt and Griff stronger. I think they've gotten a deeper glimpse into each other almost. I think Griff realizes the extent of Britt's independence and realizes that her commitment to justice is not always going to be a traditional whatever, but it's a whatever it takes approach, while he's a more traditional. And I think Britt has seen his vulnerable side, which he tries to keep well hidden. So I think they can't come tighter in the end. And yes, and I think anything coming forward would bring Allie in into a deeper relationship with them. Her mother's not well, so I have toyed with the idea of her moving in with them and and, you know, focusing more on the three of them and bringing Allie into the light, maybe something specifically focusing on her coming up. But yeah, she's a good character. I like her character too.
Well, it is, because it's difficult for a child to come live with a different parent. And sometimes they rebel and sometimes they adjust. So it could be interesting to see what Allie decides what she wants to do, because she may speak for herself. You know, she may not let you speak for her.
Right, exactly. She's a pretty outspoken kid and has a good head on her shoulders. So she could just take the reins in her own hands.
Well, I'm not gonna say what happens at the end or who caused all this to happen and why, but what can parents and coaches and educators learn from reading this? And what type of education should the schools include, or guidance counselors, or church groups, or anything, to understand the dangers of performance-enhanced drugs, or even realizing that peer pressure is, you know, pressure is bad, whether it's parental pressure or peer pressure. It could destroy a student. I mean, it can destroy a kid in a minute. So what can people learn from this? Because they can learn a lot.
Right. I think that, I think hopefully parents will think twice about how much pressure is put on kids. You know, sporting events, I have two grandsons that are now in sports, and my two sons were in sports, and there's a ton of pressure on kids athletically. I mean, academically, yes, but athletically. And it's not just from the parents and coaches, but even their teammates. You know, if you you drop the ball, or you're the one that gets out the last out in the game, you know, that's tough, because it's peer pressure as well as, you know, the pressure from the coach. So I think parents really need to back off on pressuring. I feel like, you know, home is where you should be able to get support and be respected for whatever level you're at, you know, as long as you've tried your best. My dad used to say to us, get off the bench and get into the game, which meant we didn't have to be the best at what we did, but we had to get in there and try. And I feel like that's the advice parents need to put out. If not, you've got to win, but just get in there and do your best. And I think coaches, like you said earlier, you know, I think we need to have drug testing in college. And I think if a kid seems off, it needs to be called out. You know, you need to address it and not think, well, let's see how they play, or let's win this game and then we'll talk about it. Or, you know, I feel like you said, it really has to be addressed right as soon as it's noticed, because that's, you know, we want to keep our kids healthy and strong. And if you kind of ignore stuff, which everybody has a tendency to do at times, you kind of let something slide, you just can't, you know, we can't. We need to step up and take care of the kids. And not let things slide by if you have a if you're thinking something's wrong.
You know, I've noticed lately, I'm not going to say why, whom in my family went through this recently. Coaches, you know, sometimes enlist a child and have them recruit them to go to a specific college because they think that they play outstanding. And they've watched them, scouts, they watch them, yeah. And what happens, and this is the true story, it's devastating. And I could imagine what would have happened to Ashley or even to Mitzi or to any one of them is when you play your very best and all of a sudden you get cut from the team for no reason because there's 10 kids that are better. But yet they insisted that you come to this college because your grades are 4.0 or 4.5.
Uh-huh.
And they want somebody like that, and you practice, and you made no mistakes at whatever, and all of a sudden, out of the world, you lose your whole world. How does a kid deal with that? I mean, seriously, that's hard, and that's a fact. That is a true thing that just happened. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah,
I mean, what would happen to Ashley or to Mitzi if they got cut? I think they would have been destroyed.
Right. It's devastating, right? And I think there's a lot of politics in sports at a higher level too. You know, when you get into college, there's a lot of politics of who's who. And who knows who, and, you know, that's like behind the scenes that kids don't realize, and I think that plays a part in there, too. And it is devastating to work your hardest and then not make a team. You know, it's a tough, really tough thing to deal with.
How did you create that last scene? No one saw what happened, but how did you create that final scene that was, like, scaring the daylights out of me? I'm saying, like, is this going to happen? Is she going to make it? Is this guy, is this person going to do this? Is anyway, I mean, is anybody going to live through this? That's like, oh, my God.
I think that scene almost created itself. It was not, I mean, it sort of was as I was, it sort of unfolded as I was writing because I didn't have it in my head how that would end. But it just sort of really sort of unfolded as I was writing it. You know, where kind of Gwen got involved and other people came into it to where it all sort of, everyone sort of comes together there. And it really wasn't something I thought out or planned out ahead of time. It was just really as I was writing it and thinking in my head, okay, what's happening? What are all these people doing as they're all finding out what actually happened with Ashley? What are they all doing? And it's sort of all just, everybody kept coming towards this convergence of all meeting up in that same place. So, yeah, I think it worked well, but it honestly wasn't planned out.
Well, did Greg and Gwen, I mean, this is they find out the truth about what happened, and what was their reaction to the whole thing? I mean, how did they feel about what really happened to Ashley? And when they learned the truth, we're not going to say what it is, though. That was so heartbreaking.
Right.
It was a box of tissues, by the way.
No. Greg's left out a little bit in that final scene. I mean, we see Gwen's reaction when she realizes who was involved and what happened. And Greg is not really in that final scene. I mean, my image of Greg is just he's packing up and driving away, you know, from his home, and I don't know what, or sitting alone in the house because he's going to, you know, nobody left for him. But and Gwen will have to deal with whatever is the repercussion of her behavior. But, it's everybody kind of loses I think
so too. There are really no winners here. So if anybody could change anything, if Britt could change something or Griff could change something, do you think they still would have bought the house? Knowing what happened?
I think so. Because ultimately the house was good. The house is a good thing and a nice house in a good place. It was really what happened externally. You know, it was what happened next door, and it was what happened in the town and in the city. It's nothing. I mean, the house itself was still a safe haven for them. So I think the house will still stand. They'll still live there and like being there. It was more the outside, what was going on the outside in their community that was the crazy stuff. But their home was still a safe haven for them.
Well, what about those noises? What were they? I mean, I would not have stayed there for 5 minutes. No, seriously. Like, oh, my God. No, thank you. I mean, like, just the slightest thing. And I live in a quiet building. I live in a really nice place. And the building I grew up in as a teenager, before I moved, I mean, I opened the door every day, and I never knew who was going to be there, like homeless people or vagrants or something, because they didn't watch the building.
Yeah.
So here I feel like, yeah, this is like more of a safe haven. So if I hear people running in the hall, it's a little munchkins next door, and I go like, uh-oh, who is that? Why is there noise? So if they could, change something, I don't know. What were those noises? Seriously.
The noises get revealed. It's Rhea out in the woods wandering. But that does get revealed. In some point, she does tell Britt that she goes out and sings in the woods and calling for her son. So I think that that's what the noises ended up being. Nothing harmful. Just one of Rhea's odd behaviors.
I was hoping it would be haunted and there would be a ghost coming out. You never
she
know.
She might put a bigger shower curtain on the shower, though.
Oh, God.
On the shower curtain.
Yeah, so the last, before we
freaky.
End up, that last line in the book got me. What did you mean by a little dirt never hurt anyone? That was a perfect ending, by the way. That was a perfect last line. Seriously.
I think it's Griff is really... You know, Griff is the he's the good guy. He's always does the right thing, which is in conflict or contrast maybe to Britt, who, you know, goes after justice or whatever she believes, you know, full force without really looking first. She kind of leaps before she looks. And Griff is much more stable and clean. You know, he doesn't get dirty. He does the right thing. He follows the rules. And I think he realizes from what Britt does at the end, the risk she takes and her fear of coming to him and telling him the truth of what she's done, he realizes maybe he needs to get a little dirty. You know, maybe he can't be this clean guy and always doing the right thing, that sometimes it's okay to bend the rules a little bit if it's for a good reason.
Well, if it means saving somebody's life, why not? Yeah.
Right.
She's definitely more my kind of person than he is, seriously. I know that. It's terrible. I know, my husband complains because if I want to know something, I'm going to break the rules until I get there. And if I really want to know something, I'm just going to do it just to get there. I don't care. So before we end, what's next for you, and where can we learn more about you and your work? And everybody, Thanksgiving is in a couple of weeks. You know, you really should bring a present when you go for the turkey. Besides cake, and Hanukkah is December 4th, everyone. I looked it up because I have to know when I have to start sending presents out. And Christmas, you know when that is. And, you know, nothing like a stocking stuffer for 10,000 books. So get started, people. The Scotch Issue is fantastic. The Book of M was really fantastic. Alison Brennan's book, Too Far Gone, is great. And a whole bunch more that I read. And, of course, John Land's Manuscript for Murder. If you like Jessica Fletcher and you want to know a new flair about Sheriff Metzger, you're going to find out when you read it. So where can we learn more about you and your work and your website?
Right now I'm working on a piece of commercial fiction. It's a story of two families and the aftermath of a tragedy and how it affects their relationship and their marriages, their lives and their communities. So that's in the works right now. And my website for more information on me and the other books I have out is patriciahale.org.
I think I read something else that you wrote. I'm trying to remember. That when I received your book, that was a present, everybody, and a surprise. Seriously. Sometimes I just don't know if I'm getting something. And I said, wait a minute, I know, I'm looking on my Just Reviews site, and I'm going to remember, I know I read something else that you wrote.
You read the Church of the Holy Child, you read. I remember you
reviewed
that for me.
And it was really good. And that's why I said, I know I read her books before. Because I jumped at the chance and I said, okay, good. And then when Cheryl said, Do you want to do a blog? So I didn't even hesitate. I already read the book. I didn't even tell her that it was in my hand. So I wasn't sure if you sent it. I think you sent it. I think you actually sent it. And I'm going like, wait a minute, she wants me to read this? Oh, my God. So I do hope that we get to do this again, and I do hope you do a blog tour because Partners in Crime is the best. And
Fran is
actually, yeah, and I'm actually working on book number 20 besides my magazine.
Wow.
Yeah, so if anybody has children or has articles that they want to put in MJ11, it's going to be writers of all ages. From ages 5 to 110. Yeah, so if you have an article, anybody, just feel free to send it. There's a place called Lipstick Ink, and they sent me teenagers and kids that actually review books. And I just read a book by one of the teens, Avery Likes Values Friendship, by Paige Brothington. It's excellent, and she's 17. And she wrote this.
Wow.
And I just did the review, and I'm going to give the book to my 11-year-old niece because it's about sports and sportsmanship and softball.
Ah.
And it's really good. And what happens when friends get in the way of each other, and it's really an excellent book for all kids to read. So it's going to be
good.
Yeah, the sun is not out, but the sun was shining just now. It's really great. And I want to thank you so much. And you know what? I don't normally do shows at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, ever. But
I'm so
actually
appreciative that you did.
That's okay. I rearranged the world, but that's okay. This was definitely worth it, and I'm glad I did it. And everybody, thank you so very much. We're going to be back on Wednesday at 10 a.m. with John Land, and I do hope we get to do this again. And when do you think your next book is coming out so I can put it in my little phone here?
Hopefully sometime next year.
Okay, well, just let me know when, or just send it. You know I'm going to read it. You know I'm going to read it. But I'm hoping that my next book, Silent Voices, will come out, and it's told from the point of view of the dead people behind the gravestone and how they got there and who put them there. We hope we get that done, too. So everybody, have a great day. Patricia, thank you. Cheryl, have a great day. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thanks, Fran. Bye-bye.